Today's shiur will be Mesichta Sanhedrin Daf Tes Vov, but we will start two lines from the bottom of Daf Yudalad Omid Bey. The Gemara here quotes from the Mishnah where it said that Ha'erechen V'chula, which means Ha'erechen Hametaltulim B'Shloisha. The Mishnah said that Erechen, which are immovable objects, in order to evaluate the value of it when you come to redeem it, you have to have a bezdin of three people. And the Gemara asks, Mai Erechen Hametaltulim? What does Erechen Hametaltulim mean? We know that the term Erechen is referred to a special case. That when a person says, Erki Olai, the Erech, the value of myself is upon me, but he uses the term Erech, or he says, Erkecho Olai, your Erech is upon me, or Erkoy Olai, his Erech is upon me, etc. Then the Torah prescribes a specific amount of money he has to give based on the age. It doesn't depend on the value of the person, but there is a specific amount of money prescribed in the Torah how much he has to give, depending on the age of the person. But that is only concerning a human being. We don't find the concept of erech concerning objects. The only thing we find concerning objects is that a person is able to be magdish them, he's able to make them holy, meaning he's able to give them away to the bedek habayis, to hegdish, but that is not the concept of erech. There you wouldn't use the lashon erech, you would use the lashon damim. For instance, you would say, demei keli ze olai, the money, the value of that keli is upon me. Then you have to give to Hegdish the value of that Kehle. Or even if you use the term Domim concerning yourself, if you say Domi Olai, my value is upon me, then also the din would be that you have to give to Hegdish the value of yourself. Only concerning a human being. And if you use the Lashon Erech, then there is a special din of Erechin. And that's the Gemara's question here. When it says in the Mishnah that Erechin Hametaltalim, Erechin of movable objects, need a bezdin of three to evaluate how much you have to give, but there is no such thing as erechen bametaltalin. Erechen are only concerning a human being. The Omer of Gidl Omer Rav, said of Gidl, said in the name of Rav, this means, Omer, if someone says, erech keila ze'olai, the erech of this vessel is upon me. Now he used the Lashon Erech, which really does not apply to a keila. So there the din is that you do have to give the value of the keli, even though he used the Lashon Erech, which really doesn't apply. Because the Omer of Gidl, because of Gidl said, Omer Rav in the name of Rav, Ha'omer Erech Keli Ze'olai, if someone says, the Erech of this vessel is upon me, Noisin Domov, he has to give the value of that keli. My time, what is the reason? Because Odom Yoideya, a person knows, we assume that a person knows, She'ein Erech LeKeli, that there is no such thing as an Erech to a vessel. So when he used the Lashon Erech Keli Ze'olai, he didn't make a mistake thinking that there is a concept of Erech to a Keli. He knew there was no Erech to a Keli. But the Gomar V'Omar L'Shem Domim, but when he said it, what he really meant was that he would give the value of that Keli. Because we have a rule that Ein Odom Moitzi Dvarav L'Vatola. A person doesn't just say words in vain. So he wouldn't have said these words knowing that Erech doesn't apply to a Keli. He wouldn't have said it in vain. So if he did say it, probably what he meant was, he used the term erech, but he meant domin, to give the value. Mishum halcha, therefore, noisein domo. Therefore, he has to give the value as if he would have said, that the mei keilas are alai, the money, the value of the keilas upon me. And this is what the Mishnah means. Erech ha-metaltalin must have three people to evaluate. That means, if you use the Lashon Erech concerning metaltalin, where you anyway have to give the value of the keilas. And there you need three people. But the Gemara asks, hi, erech ha-metaltalin, according to that, how could the Mishnah use the Lashon Erechin HaMetaltalim, which seems to be saying that the Erechin is Metaltalim, Erechin Shel Metaltalim in Boyle. It should have said, Erechin of Metaltalim. That if you made an Erech of Metaltalim, then you have to pay the value, so you would need three people to evaluate. But when it says, Erechin HaMetaltalim is Mashmeh, that the Erechin are Metaltalim. And therefore, it doesn't seem like this is the Pshat in the Mishnah. Gemara answers, you should learn Erechin Shel Metaltalin. Read it that way, that what it really means is Erechin of Metaltalin. Reb Chisda, Omer Avime, Reb Chisda, in the name of Avime, said a different pshat in the Mishnah where it says Erechin HaMetaltalin. It means that Matfis Metaltalin LeErechin. If you grab onto Metaltalin for Erechin, which means that if a person said Erki Olai, I give my Erech, or I will give the Erech of somebody else, which is the proper concept of Erech because he said it concerning a human being. But then, when he was obligated to pay for that erechin, so he took a metaltalin and he said that I designate this metaltalin that this should be the payment for the erechin that I owe. And this is what the Mishnah says, that when the bezdin will come to take this metaltolin for the sake of payment for his erechin, you would have to have three people to evaluate the value of that metaltolin. And the Gemara asks, "Hi, erechin ha-metaltolin, so how could the Mishnah use the lashon erechin ha-metaltolin?" It should have said metaltolin shel erechin meboyaleh, the metaltolin of erechin, because that's really what it is. He made erechin, and now he has metaltolin of that erechin that he's going to pay with the metaltolin. And that's what the Mishnah means. So it should have said metaltolin shel erechim. What answers can he learn metaltolin shel erechim? But read it that way. This is what it really means: the metaltolin of erechim. Then the Gemara says Rabbi Avua says a different teretz. That what does the Mishnah mean erechim hametaltolin? But Eimer, someone says erki olai, my erech should be upon me. The regular case of erechim. Bo koyin ligvis memenu, when the koyin comes to collect. Because if the person himself does not pay for his donation, for his promise of erechin, then the kohen would come and take things away from him as payment for his promise. So when the kohen comes to collect, if it's metaltolin, if the kohen gets metaltolin of this person to collect his debt, so then b'shloisha. That's what the Mishnah means. You will have to have three people evaluating the metaltolin that will be taken as a payment for his erechin. But if it's karkoiz, if what the Bezdin will take, what the Kohen will take, will be real estate, land, then ba'asora, you must have 10 people there to evaluate the value of the land. And that's what the Mishnah means. Erechin ha-metaltolin b'shloisha. That means that the erechin that will be paid with metaltolin that the Kohen will take away, you must have three people to evaluate. Oh, malay rabacha medifta l'ravina, v'tabacha medifta set ravina, b'shloim el'afukim ha-hegdesh b'inyin shloisha. Mela, we understand that when you come to take away from Hegdesh, you must have three people to evaluate. That when something, an object is Hegdesh, and then you want to redeem it from Hegdesh. So what will happen when you redeem it from Hegdesh? You give the money to Hegdesh, and the object goes to you, and the object is not Hegdesh anymore, it becomes Chum. So every time you redeem an object from Hegdesh, you're taking it out of Hegdesh, putting it into Chum. So there we understand that you have to have three people to evaluate, to make sure that you don't cheat Hegdesh. Elele yulele Hegdesh shleishalameli. But according to this last shot, that the metaltolin will be taken away as payment for the erechin. So what's happening here is that the metaltolin is being made into Hegdesh now. Till now the metaltolin belongs to the person. We want to take it away from him and turn it into Hegdesh. And for that we need three people. Why should we need three people to make an object into Hegdesh? So what really he's saying is, and according to the first two pshatim in the Gemara here, we understand why you need three people. According to the first pshat, when he said, Erech kele ze'olai, and we said that he has to have three people to evaluate, we understand why. Because when he said, the Erech of this kele is upon me, and we said that what he meant was the value of this kele, so automatically the kele became Hegdesh. Now, we want to know how much he has to pay to redeem it. That means that we have to see how much he has to pay to take it out of Hegdesh, so then we know why we need three people. The same according to the second pshat. When a person said, Erki Olai, and then he was matfiz the metaltolin for the payment, that he said, let this metaltolin be the payment for my erech. So when he said that, the metaltolin became Hegdesh as payment for his erech. Now when he comes to pay to redeem for those metaltolin, he is trying to take the metaltolin out of Hegdesh, so we understand why we need three people. But according to this last pshat, that it means that he didn't designate the metaltolin for Hegdesh. The metaltolin are his. He just said, Erki Olai. Then the Kohen comes to take the metaltolin away, and that's when we need three people. When he takes it away from the person and gives it to Hegdesh. So in this case, we need three people to take it away from him to turn it into Hegdesh. And that's his question. Why should we need three people to turn an object into Hegdesh? Amalei said to him, Svarahu, it's a logical svara. Mali yule, mali afuke. What difference does it make? Whether we want to bring something into Hegdesh, or we want to take something out of Hegdesh. Afuk in my time, what is the reason? When we want to take something out of Hegdesh, we need three people. Deal metoy, just in case they might make a mistake. The person might pay less than the value of the object, and he will be cheating Hegdesh, and that's why we have to have three people for the evaluation. When we take it into Hegdesh, we're also afraid you might make a mistake. You might evaluate it wrong, and you might think the object is worth more than it really is, and then you'll be cheating Hegdesh. Because Hegdesh will be taking the object thinking that this is worth the full amount and really it isn't. And therefore, even for bringing it into Hegdesh, you must have three people. Then the Gemara continues, it said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda says, which means that Rabbi Yehuda said, when you come to evaluate the Hekdesh, you must have one Kohen amongst them. By Metaltzelim, when we said that you have to have three people to evaluate, you must have one of the three a Kohen. By Karkois, when you have to have 10 people to evaluate, you must have one of the 10 a Kohen. So the Gemara asks, who says there must be a Kohen amongst them? So that is the reason why the Torah mentions Kohen. And the Torah says that when you'll come to evaluate, the Torah refers to a Kohen, because there has to be at least one Kohen amongst them. But according to the Rabbonon, which is the previous opinion, it doesn't mention the Kohen. So obviously the Rabbonon holds that you do not need a Kohen, one of those who evaluate. So the question is, Kohen lo maluhu, why does the Torah have to write Kohen if there is no need for a Kohen? And the Gemara says, Kasha, this is a question that remains unanswered. Then the Gemara continues, HaKarkois, Tishav HaKohen, it said in the Mishneh, that when you come to evaluate Karkois, real estate, you have to have 9 people with one Kohen. Together 10, but of the 10, one has to be a Kohen. The Gemara says, Menu Hanemila, how do we know that? Omar Shmuel, Shmuel answered, Asora Kohen in Ksuvim Beparsha. There are 10 times the word Kohen in the Parsha. In this Parsha, that deals with Hekdesh. And as we learned in the previous daf, that in the Parsha of Hekdesh, there are 3 portions. One is the Parsha of Erechen, then the second Parsha is of Pidyon Behema, and the third Parsha is of Karkois. And we have 3 times the word Kohen in the Parsha of Erechen, 3 times the word Kohen in the Parsha of Pidyon Behema, and we have 4 times the word Kohen in the Parsha of Karkois. So together we have 10 times the word Kohen, and therefore we have to have 10 people, and one of them has to be a Kohen. Why only one of them a Kohen? So he explains. Because in the Torah it says 10 times the word Kohen, chad legufay. One is for itself. The first time it says Kohen, that teaches us that you have to have a Kohen. Now Hanoch, the rest, the next time it says Kohen, have a miut ach a miut. That's an exemption of an exemption. A miut after a miut. And the rule is, a miut ach a miut el rabbis. That whenever the Torah writes a miut, after a miut, it comes to include. When the Torah writes an expression which seems to exclude, so that, if it says once, it excludes. But if the Torah writes that expression twice, so it's an exclusion after an exclusion, so we say that this does not come to exclude, but it comes to include. As the general rule that 2 negatives make a positive, so when the Torah writes 2 times something that excludes a certain thing, we know what the Torah really means is to include. And therefore here too, the first time it says Kohen, so that means a Kohen, so you have to have a Kohen. Then the Torah writes again Kohen and again Kohen, so then it's already a miut after a miut, because the word Kohen excludes, it excludes a Yisrael. It has to be only a Kohen, not a Yisrael. So when the Torah excludes it twice, so it's really l'rabbis, it comes to include. So really when it comes to tell us that you don't need a Kohen, but a Yisrael is also good. And therefore, all the other 9 times that the Torah says Kohen, they're all in the category of a miut after a miut after a miut after a miut. So therefore, we say that they all come to include that you don't need only a Kohen. A Yisrael is also good. So it comes out that we need 9 Yisraeli, because 9 times the word Kohen later, and they are Marbe Yisrael, so you have to have 9 Yisrael. And the first time, which is not the miut achamiut, remains as a simple pshat, which means Kohen, you must have one Kohen. So it comes out that Afilu test Yisrael, Ve'echat Kohen, and even if you have 9 Yisrael, and one Kohen is good enough. Ma'afki lo Rav Huna b'reider Rav Nosson, but Rav Huna b'reider Rav Nosson asked the question, Eime, let us say, Chamisha Kohenim v'chamisha Yisraelim, maybe we have to have 5 Kohenim and 5 Yisraelim, because he learns like this. The first time it says Kohen, you need a Kohen. The second time it says Kohen, that is a miut, achar a miut, so that comes to include a Yisrael. Now the third time it says Kohen, that starts all over again. Because now we already included a Yisrael. So why does the Torah write again Kohen? Obviously the Torah wants to teach us that you have to have a Kohen. Then when the Torah writes a fourth time Kohen, that's already a miut after the third Kohen, so it's a miut achar a miut. So now it comes to include a Yisrael. Then we're finished. The Torah writes a fifth time Kohen. So now we start all over again. That now the Torah means a Kohen. And then the sixth time would come to include a Yisrael. And that's how it would go on. So it would come out that the first and the third, and the fifth, and the seventh, and the ninth word Kohen, they should all mean a Kohen mamish. But the second, and the fourth, and the sixth, and the eighth, and the tenth, they're each a miut after the miut, they should come to include a Yisrael. So it should come out that from this parsha we should learn that you have to have 5 Kohenim and 5 Yisraelim. And the plural we say that nine Yisraelim and one Kohen is enough, because we learn that all nine times the word Kohen are considered a miyut achar miyut. But his question is, maybe we shouldn't consider it that way. We should only consider the, for each two as miyut achar miyut. And the Gemara says, Kasha, this is a Kasha, a question which is not answered. Then the Gemara continues, Va'odom kayotze ben, that when you come to evaluate the value of an Odom for Hegdish, you also have the same deen like the previous cases. The Gemara asks, Odom mikodesh, is an Odom holy? Is there such a thing as a person becoming Kodesh that we should say that when you evaluate the Odom, you must have a certain amount of people? A person, a human being, cannot become Hegdish. Omer Rabavuah said, the case is when a person says domi alai, that means my value upon me, but he doesn't use the lashon erechim, then he would have to pay a fixed amount that the Torah prescribes. But he used the lashon domi alai. So then the din is, the time we learned, oimer domi alai, if someone says domi alai, my value is upon me, shomei noisei ke'ever anim ke'beshuk, you evaluate him as the, in the price of a slave that is sold in the market. You look at him, how much would he be worth if he would be sold as a slave in the market, and that's how much he has to give to Hegdish. So since the value of a person depends on the price of him being sold as a slave, Eved Ishkiz Kakoyas, and we have a rule that Avodim slaves, Goyisha slaves, are compared to Karka, to land. Because there is a pasuk that says concerning Goyisha slaves, V'isnachaltem oisam libneichem achreichem achut asoylam, that you should inherit them to your children. So the Torah uses the concept of inheritance concerning slaves, the same lashon as we find concerning karka. So therefore we say that many of the dinim that refer, apply to karka, apply to slaves also. So just like by karka we said that you have to have 10 people to evaluate, so by a slave also. And a person who says domi alai, since his value depends on his price as a slave, so he also needs 10 people to evaluate his value when he pays his value to Hekesh. But Tosis asks the kasha, what's the Gemara's question? Odom Kodesh, can a person be Kodesh? Yes. Why can't we say? We're talking about an Eved himself. That if a person is Magdish and Eved, a person owns an Eved, and he says, let this Eved be Hegdish. And we know, the Gemara says in Perek HaSheleach, that if somebody is Magdish, his property, and amongst them were Avodim, so then the Gizborim of Hegdish, the treasurers of Hegdish, have no right to set them free. But what we see from there is that the Avodim do become Hegdish, they belong to Hegdish. And we see later on from the Gemara here too, there's a question concerning the hair, as we will see. But we see from this Gemara too, that Avodim can be Hegdish. And maybe that's what the Gemara in the Mishnah means when it says that an Odom is the same as Karka. Maybe it means when you are Magdish, an Odom, an Evet. So what is the Gemara's question? Odom mi Kodesh, can Odom be holy? Sure, an Odom could be holy, an Evet can become Hegdish. And Tosfos answers, and the word Odom is not mashman that it means an Evet. It would have said Avodim. When it says Odom, it usually doesn't mean an Evet. Plus, Tosfos says it's possible that here the Gemara asks, according to Rav, who holds that if somebody is Magdish as Evet, he automatically goes out free. And therefore, there is no such thing as being Magdish and Evet. Now, according to Rav, the question will be, what does the Mishnah mean, Odom? And according to that, we have to answer that we mean when a person says Domi Alai, we have to have 10 people to evaluate his value before he pays to Hekesh. Then the Gemara continues, Boy Rabovin, Rabovin asked the question on the boy, Sar ho'ei medli gozis bekamo. The person is magdish the hair, but hair that's long and is ready to be cut. So how many people do you have to evaluate that? Do we say, ke gozis domi ubishloisha, that it's like it's cut already? Since it's ready to be cut, it's as if it's cut already, and if it's cut, it is metaltalin, and therefore three would be enough, like metaltalin. Because we do have a rule sometimes, anything that's ready to be cut, it's as if it's cut. So therefore, this hair would be considered metaltalin, and three would be enough. Or since it's still connected to the person, and by a person we said you have to have 10 people to evaluate, so the hair which is connected to the person, you would also have to have 10 people to evaluate. And hair definitely has a value. As Rashi says, there are certain things you could make with human hair. And if the person was magdish, his hair, the question is, how many people do you have to evaluate that? And the Gemara says, Toshma, come in here, I'll answer your question. Learn, Nabraise, Hamadish is Avdoi. If someone makes his Evet Hegdish, Ein Moyalimboi, you are not Moyal. Like this, if somebody has use from an object that belongs to Hegdish, he is Moyal by Hegdish, and there are certain dinim that apply, Karbonis he has to bring, etc. So if a person is Magdish is Evet, you are not Moyal. And the reason is, because we know that this din of Mi'ila does not apply to Karkoz. Only if you are Moyal in an object, in a metaltalin, and in a movable object, that's when the din of Mi'ila applies. But if you are moil, you have use from Hegdish, from Karka, from real estate of Hegdish, then the din of Me'ilah does not apply. And therefore he says the same. If someone is Magdish is Evet, and his Evet is Hegdish, you are not moil in that because the Evet has a din of Karka. Says, moil in Besairei. Atake, in the Evet himself, you are not moil because he is like Karka. But if you have use from his hair, you are moil. The kai melon, and we understand, we know the beside ha'imid ligzis pligi, that the machloik is here between the Shimon Gamliel and the first Tane, is concerning hair which is ready to be cut. If the hair is not ready to be cut, then everyone would agree that you are not moil because this is part of the evet, and the evet is like karka. The machloik is here since the hair is ready to be cut, so the Tane kama holds that you are not moil in the hair either, because he holds even if it's ready to be cut, it's still not cut, and therefore it has been of karka. The Shimon ben Gamliel says you are moil in the hair because he holds, since it's ready to be cut, it's considered as if it's cut and it's metaltalin, and therefore you are moil. Shema Amino, so here we see the answer to the question. His question was whether you need 10 people or 3 people to evaluate the hair that is ready to be cut. So now we see this is a machloikis between Shimon ben Gamliel and Tanakama. According to Tanakama, who holds that you are not moil in the hair, even if it's ready to be cut, because it's still like karka. So by the case of the people that we need to evaluate, he would hold you would need 10 to evaluate. And if Shimon Gamliel holds that you are moil in the hair when it's ready to be cut, because it's metaltalin, he will hold that you only need 3 people to evaluate the hair. Then the Gemara says, name it, let us say, Hanetanoi, Hanetanoi, that the machloikis between Shimon Gamliel and Tanakame is the same machloikis as other Tanoim who argue. That's not, because they learn in the Mishnah. The Meir says, yes, dvorim shein kekarka vein kekarka. There are certain things which are like karka, which really are karka, but in halacha they don't have the din of karka. Ve'ein chachomim moedi loy, but the chachomim are not moedi to him. They argue and they say that they do have a din of karka. Kesad, what is the din? What case is it? Esek fanim tu'unois masarti loch. If one person says to another that I gave you 10 full vines of grapes, the halal amen, he says to him, ain't an elachomesh, you only gave me 5, and I only owe you 5. So this wouldn't be concerning vines, it would be concerning money, for instance. Then the din is that moedib amiktas chay b'shvur. If somebody denies half and admits to half, or denies part and admits to part, he is chay b'shvur. So the din would be that the person would have to swear that he only owes him 5. But then there is also a din that by karka you don't swear. If the same thing happens by karka, if 2 people argue and he says you owe me this amount of karka and he says I only own you part of it, so the din is that he doesn't have to swear because by karka you don't swear. So here we have a case where he said you owe me 10 kfanim to unais, 10 full vines of grapes, and he said I only owe you 5. Reb Meir mechayev, Reb Meir says you are chayev ashvua. And the chachomim say no. Anything that's connected to the ground is like karka. And since he argues over things which are connected to the ground, therefore you are potter, because the argument between the two is over karka. And by karka there is no din of a shvur. For Omer Rabbi Yosef Bar Chanina said, that we're talking here in a case where the grapes were ready to be gathered to be taken off the vines. And the machloikis between them is, Marsovar, one holds, kibitzuras damet, as if it's cut off. The mayor holds that since it's ready to be taken off, so we consider them as if they were taken off already. So they are not karka anymore. So therefore the din is that he is a meidim amiktas who has to swear. Umarsovar, one holds, the chachomim hold, lav kibitzuras damet. They are not as if they were already taken off, gathered. And therefore they are still considered karka, and by karka there is no din of a shvur. So it seems as if that this machloikis between these tanoim is the same machloikis as the tanoim before. Just like we had before a machloikis between the Shimon ben Gamliel and the Chachamim. Whether, when you're Magdish and Evet, if you are moil in the hair that's ready to be cut off, and the machloikis was whether we consider that hair as if it's cut off already or not, seems to be the same machloikis as here, that the grapes are ready to be taken off, the vines, are they considered as if they are taken off already or not? And the Gemara says, well, no, I feel the tamer of Meir. Bamet, you could say, in the previous machlekes, it also go according to Reb Meir. In other words, that even Reb Meir, who holds in this machlekes concerning the grapes, that you are chayef, because he holds it as if it was taken off already, nevertheless, by the hair, he might hold that it's not considered as if it's taken off. Why? Because at kamle kama Reb Meir, only Reb Meir says here, hosam in the case of the grapes, because kol kama de shofko, as long as you will leave it, makhish krikshe. It'll get weaker. In other words, it'll deteriorate by staying on the vines. And therefore, we consider it as if it's taken off, because a person normally would definitely take it off. av aside by the case of the hair. Kol kama de shofkelu ashbuch mashbach. As long as you leave it, the more you leave it, the better it will be. And therefore there, since it is not necessary to take it off, he could leave it. So there, lav davki, that we say that it is considered as if it's taken off already. Then the Gemara continues to quote from the Mishnah, Dinei nefoshes v'chulu. It said in the Mishnah that when it comes to judge capital punishment, it comes through 23. You have to have a bezin of 23. If someone has relations with an animal, then the din is that you have to kill the animal and the person. So also you have to have 23 people to judge the person and to judge the animal. So the Gemara says, Kaposik Bitoni, you're saying it in a very clear-cut way. And it's no difference whether the aveda with the animal was done through a male or it was done through a female. In both cases, it has to be through 23. And the Gemara's question is, we understand if the person is the female that is doing the aveda with the animal, we understand why the animal also has to have 23 for its judgment. Except because the pasuk says, you should kill the woman and the pehma. If a woman has relations with the pehma, the pasuk says, you should kill the woman and the pehma. So the Torah compares them both. So we understand that just like to kill the woman, you must have a bezin of 23. To kill the payment, you also must have a bezin of 23. But if the male did the aveda with the payment, minolon, how do we know that in order to kill the payment, you also have to have a bezin of 23? And as it seems, the main question of the Gemara is only in the case where the male is the nishkav. Because concerning a male doing an aveda with a payment, there are two possibilities. You could have the male being the active participant, he is the shaykhet, he is the one that's doing it with the behemah, or he could be the nishkaf, he could be the one that's bringing the behemah upon him. So in the case where he is the shaykhet, he is the one that is actively participating in the saveda, then the Gemara wouldn't have a question. How do we know that the behemah also has to have a bezin of chav gimel? Because we have a pasuk for that too. Because in the same place where we have a pasuk concerning the woman where it says, V'arakta se'isha v'tabheima, meis yumosu, v'meyem bom, and we learn out from that pasuk that just like the woman needs chav gimel, so does the behema, the pasuk before that says, V'isha she'yitze in shchavte v'tabheima, meis yumos, v'tabheima t'aroigu. If a person will lay with the behema, he should get killed, and you should kill the behema. So here too, the Torah compares the behema to the man. So we say that just like the man needs a bezin of 23, so does the behemah need a bezin of 23. So that wouldn't be a question, how do we know that the behemah also needs a bezin of 23? The main question is, in the case where the man is not the shoychev, but the nishka, the man brings the behemah upon him. And that is not included in this pasuk, because this pasuk just said, the ish asha yitein shchavtei bibhema, he is the shoychev, he is doing the act with the behemah. So there we know that he needs chav gimel for the payment. But how do we know that even in the case where the person brings the payment upon him, you also need chav gimel for the payment? And that's what the Gemara says, because there's another pasuk in Parashat Mishpatim, it says, "Kol shoychev im behema meis yumos," that anybody who lays with the payment should die. Now the question is, this pasuk is extra. To say that a person has to die, we know from this pasuk that we just brought, where it says, "V'isha she'yitze in shchavte b'peima mois yumos." So we know that if a person doesn't aveda with a peima, he has to die. So why does the pasuk in Parashat Mishpatim have to say this pasuk called shoychev in behema mois yumos? And we have a klal that whenever we have a pasuk that is extra, so we use the klal of im eina inyan, which means that if it cannot be used for the din that it seems to be saying, we use it for another din. To this, teneyu inyan, give it to something else. And that's what we do here. And we answer, if we don't need this pasuk to tell us that if a person is the active participant in the aveda, that he gets killed. So if you don't need the pasuk for that, teneyu inyan l'nishka. So let's use this pasuk for a nishka, in the case where he is not actively participating, but he is bringing the payment upon himself. That's what the pasuk means. But the question is, if that's what the pasuk means, why did the pasuk use the lashon, "V'isha she'yitein shchavtei b'behema," that he is doing the act? If the Torah really means here the case where he is the nishkav, he is not doing the act but bringing the payment upon him, so why did the Torah write it in such a lashon, which seems to be saying that he is the shoychev? And therefore we say, "V'afkei rachmanin b'lashon shoychev," the Torah used concerning the nishkav the lotion of the shoychev, la'akush and nishkav l'shoychev, to compare the nishkav to the shoychev, to say, ma shoychev, just like in the case where he is the shoychev, where he is the active participant, The din is that who ubehem toy be'esrim v'shloisha, that he and the behema have to have a bezna 23. Af nishkaf, so too, in the case where he is a nishkaf, where he doesn't do the act, he brings the behema upon himself, also who ubehem toy be'esrim v'shloisha, he and his behema need 23. So therefore we have both here. The Torah means the case of the nishkaf, but refers to it in the expression of a k'shoichev to tell us that the din of the nishkaf is exactly like the din of the shoichev. And just like by the shoichev, we are sure that you have to have 23 because the Torah says b'feirish is a behema taroyge together with the person. As we said before, from there we know that the behema also needs 23. So in the case of the nishkaf, we also learn that you have to have 23. Then the Gemara continues and quotes from the Mishnah. Shara nishkul besen v'shloisha, said in the Mishnah that when you stone an ox, you have to have a besen of 23. This refers to an ox that killed a person. So the din is that this ox has to be killed, has to be stoned. So you have to have a bezin of 23 to judge the ox and then to stone him. The Gemara says, Shanema, how do we know that? Because the Pasuk says, Hashoyer yisokel v'gam bo'olav yumas. It says you should stone the ox, and also his master should die. So we say, what does the Torah mean? Kemisas habaylim, kachmisas hashoyer. That just like if you would have to kill the owner, if the owner would have done such an aveda that he should have been killed for, then you would have to have 23, so too. When you stone the ox, when you kill the ox, you also have to have 23. In other words, the pasuk doesn't really mean that if an ox kills a person, the master of the ox has to get killed also. What it means to say is that you kill the ox in the same fashion as you would kill his owner if the owner would have deserved misa. That means that just like the owner would need a bezin of 23, so does the ox need a bezin of 23. How do you know? Hi, the gamba all of you must look misses a bayam kachmisis a shayrudos, that this pasuk where it says gamba all of you must, that also his owner should die, comes to teach us this din that just like when you kill a person, you have to have 23. So when you kill the shay, you also have to 23. And maybe what it means to say l'ktolahudos, it actually means to tell us that you have to kill the owner. That if an ox kills a person, so you have to kill the owner too. Why do we have to change the pashup shot of the pasuk? The poshet, the word of the pasuk, mean very simple, the gam ba'ol of yuma, that also his owner should die, which means that you have to kill the owner. So why do we say that that's not what the pasuk means, and he doesn't have to be killed? And what the pasuk means, it comes to teach us that you have to have a bezna 23 to kill the ox. The Gemara says, in Cain, if it would be so, that the pasuk would actually mean that you kill the owner, lichtev, let the pasuk say the gam ba'ol of, and also his master. The lichtev, and be quiet, not say the word, yumas, to die. If the pasuk would say, Asher Yisokel, stone the ox, the gamba olof, and also his master, so we understand that his master also dies. Why does the Torah have to add the word yumas? Obviously the Torah comes to teach us a din in the din of Misa of the Shoy. The Gemara says, Ikos HaRachman HaHocha, if the Torah would write like that, without the word yumas, just write the gamba olof, Hava Mine Biskile. I would think that the owner also has to get skile. If the Torah would just say that you stone the ox and also the master, we would say that the master has to get skila. But now that the Torah says the word yumos, it means not skila, because the klal is wherever the Torah says a person should die and doesn't specify what kind of death, it is chenek, it is choking. So maybe the really what the pasuk means is that the person should die. And the reason the Torah writes the word yumos to teach us that the way the owner dies is through choking. But if the Torah would not have written the word yumos, we would say that the owner has to be stoned. So it could be that really the pasuk means that the person should die. But the Gemara says, "Biskila, talkadaitach." What are you telling me? And if the Torah wouldn't write the word yumas, we would think that the owner gets skila. How could you even think so? How could you have to have a mina? Kotal iyo, if he himself would have killed a person besides, he would get killed through a sword. Momoinai, if his money, his property, killed somebody, biskila, he should get skila, since skila is worse, stricter than sayas. So it makes no sense that if an ox killed a person, his owner should get skila. If the person himself would have killed a person, he wouldn't have got skila, he would have got sayas. So certainly, if his ox only killed somebody, even if he does deserve to die, it shouldn't be skila. So therefore, even if the Torah would not have written the word yumas, we would have known that he doesn't get skila. So we can't say that the reason the Torah writes the word yumas is in order to tell us that he doesn't get skila, because we would never think so. So we're back to the question, why does the Torah write the word yumas? So obviously the Torah wants to teach us that he doesn't really die, we just have to compare the death of the person and the death of the ox. But then the Gemara says, no, the Dilma may be high because of Rachman Yumos, the reason the Torah wrote Yumos, La Kule Aloyu, to make it easier on him, La Fuke Misayev Lechenek, to take him out from Sayev to Chenek, which means that Be'emet he does deserve to die. But the question is, if so, why does the Torah write Yumos? to take him out from Sayyid Techenek. One thing we know for sure, that Skila he doesn't get. Because if he himself would kill, he wouldn't get Skila. Certainly if his animal killed, he doesn't get Skila. But what would we think he would get? We would think he gets Sayyid, just like when he kills somebody, he gets Sayyid, so too when his animal kills somebody, he gets Sayyid. That's why the Torah writes Yumos, and as we said before, wherever the Torah writes that he gets killed and doesn't specify, it means Chenek. So the Torah tells us that here he gets Chenek. Not as like when he himself would have killed somebody, he would get Sayyid. The Torah says, no, here we make it easier on him, and he only gets Chenek. So still we remain it possible that he should get killed, and still the Torah has to write the word Yumos to teach us that he doesn't get Sayyid, but he gets Chenek. And the Gemara explains, Honiched is no question, is understood, according to the one that holds that Chenek is worse, so there is no question. Because we can't say the Torah is trying to tell us that he doesn't get Sayyid, but he gets Chenek. If he kills himself, he gets Sayyid. If his animal killed, he gets Chenek. Can't be, because Chenek is worse. So then it's understood that we cannot say that the Torah writes the word Yumos to teach us he gets Chenek, because Chenek is worse. So then it couldn't be, so the word Yumos is extra, so therefore you must say that he doesn't die. He just, the Torah writes, you must to compare the Misa of the Shayer to the Misa of the owner. El lemandoma, Chenek heal, but according to the one that holds it, Chenek is easier than Sayyid. Ma'i kelameima, what can we say? So the question remains, maybe the Torah writes, you must to tell her that he gets Chenek instead of Sayyid. The Torah makes it easier on him, since after all, he himself didn't kill the person, just his ox killed. And the Mele could remain that the person does get killed, and the reason the Torah writes, you must, is to teach us that he gets Chenek, not Sayyid. But the Gemara says, loy saka daitach. There is no svara to say that the person himself, the owner, should get killed. See, because it says further in the pasuk, im koifa yushasolov, if you will put a redeeming amount of money on the person, which means if the person will pay a certain amount of money, then he will not get killed. Now, if you're going to say really he deserves to get killed, but if he pays money, that saves him from his death. But see, doesn't the pasuk say something else? Loy sikhu koifa lenefesh v'tzeach, that you shouldn't take any money to redeem the life of a murderer. So here, if he deserves to die, which means he is considered a murderer, how can the Torah say that if he pays money, then he doesn't get killed? But the Gemara says, I have the contrary, Mishim Hu Gufa. For that reason itself, the Torah writes it. Actually, because of what we just said now, the Torah writes this din. Because Kotal Iyu, if he himself kills, he is a murderer. Loi Tizke Leber Mamayna. Then it is not enough if he pays money. If he gives Kaifer, it doesn't help him. The only thing that we could do to him is kill him. But if his ox killed, then he could redeem himself with money. But if he doesn't pay money, he would get killed. So could be this is actually what the Torah is telling us. That since his ox killed somebody, gambol of Yumas, he has to die. But since, after all, it's only his ox that kills, if he pays money, he could save himself. Not like if he would have killed himself, then the din would be that he cannot save himself with money. But in this case, he could. So we're back to the question, maybe what the Torah says, Gambol of Yumos, that his master, his owner, should die, it actually means that his owner is Chayav Misa. Elomar Cheskia. Chayin Tonad of Cheskia. So Cheskia answered, and that's how also the students in the yeshiva of Cheskia said, Omar Kro, the Pasuk says, concerning a Retzayach, concerning a murderer. The Torah says, Mois Yumas Hamak Retzayachu, that the one that hit, the one that killed, should die, because he is a Retzayach. So we dash him from the word Retzayachu, Al Retzichosoi Atahoygoi. For his own ritzicha, for his own murder, you kill him. But you can't kill a person for the murder of his ox. Then the Gemara continues, there was an Iboya question asked, Shoir Sinai Bekamo, the ox by Sinai, how many people did you have to judge him to kill him? This refers to the pasuk where it says, Imbeima Yim Ishla Yichye. It says that Hashem said before Matan Torah, to surround the mountain and make sure that nobody goes on top of the mountain. And he said that if a behemah or a man will go up, should not live, should get killed. The question of the Gemara is, how many people in the Besen did you need to judge the ox if he would go up on Har Sinai in order to kill him? And the question is, Mi gomar sho midoyre seloi, do we learn out a temporary din from a permanent din? In a case where you kill an ox in the din ledoyre, in the din that is permanent, as we said before by Shaira Nisko, you have to have a Besen of 23. The din of killing the ox who went up on Har Sinai was a temporary din. It only applied at that time. So do we learn out the din of a temporary case from the deen of a permanent case? And to say that just like in the permanent case, you have to have 23 to judge the ox, so too in the temporary case. And the Gemara says, Toshma, come here, I'll answer you. Tony Rabban Bayechesko, Rabban Bayechesko learned, the Pasuk said, Im behemo im ish lo yichya. If it's a behemo or a man, he should not live if he goes on top of the mountain. So we compare the two and say, Ma ish b'chav gimel, just like if a person would have gone up and would have to get killed. you would have to have a bezin of Chav Gimel, a behemah b'chav Gimel. So too, in the case of a behemah, you would have to have Chav Gimel. Now, how do we know by a man himself that he would have to have Chav Gimel? The reason that we have to have Chav Gimel when you have to kill a person, the Gemara said earlier, is because we learned it out from the Pasuk, Veshavtu ha'eda ve'itzilo ha'eda, that you have to have an Eda which is 10 to judge, and you have to have an Eda which is 10 to save. So together it's 20, and then the Gemara learns out 3 more, so altogether we have 23. But those are all dinim that are set after Matan Torah. We're talking here about the dinim before Matan Torah. So how do we know that even before Matan Torah, the din was that if a person had to get killed, then he would have to have Chav Gimel? So Rashi and Tosfos say, because Yisroel, which was before Matan Torah, had established the concept of a Sanhedrin, so he established it with all the dinim, also concerning dinim nefashos. So we assume that he established it with the proper dinim of dinim nefashos as we have it after Matan Torah, and therefore a man definitely would get Chav Gimel. The only question was concerning a behema, and the Gemara's answer is that if we compare a behema to a man, and a behema also needs Chav Gimel. But that's the kasha. What is the meaning of the Gemara's question, how many people you would need in the Bezin to kill the Sheir of Sinai? What difference does it make? A lot of times we find an expression in the Gemara, my dehava have. What was. It is not a din that could happen again. Now, this was a temporary thing that happened only at that time, a Rosh Hashanah, concerning Matan Torah. So what difference does it make now for us to know whether they needed Chav Gimel then or they didn't need Chav Gimel? And Tosfos says that maybe it is just to understand the Psukim. A lot of times we find that in the Gemara, that we ask questions concerning things that happened before, not because they are nafkemin la halacha, but it's just negeya to learn the psukim. That when we learn the pasuk where it says that the ox should have got killed if he would go up on Hasinai, to understand partial what the pasuk means, that's why the Gemara asks, how many people in the Bezin did they need to kill that ox? Then the Gemara continues, it said in the Mishnah, Ha'adiv ha'zeh chulu, said there that if a wolf or a lion or a bear or a leopard or a hyena or a snake, if they are judged and sentenced to die, misosam be'esrim v'shloisha. When you kill them, you have to have a bezin of 23. But then the Mishnah continues that Rabbi Eliezer said, kol akoidim lahorgon zocha. And anybody who is first to kill them, he is zochet. In other words, you don't have to have a bezin of 23, but anybody who wants could kill them. The Gemara says, Omer Rish Lakish said, v'hu shehi misu. What does Rabbi Eliezer said? That anybody could kill them. That's only if these animals killed somebody. But if they didn't kill anybody, you can't. Rav Eliezer did not mean, Shlokish says, that anybody, whenever you see a lion or a wolf, etc., you're able to kill them just like that. It is only if they killed a person, then you don't have to wait for a bezin of 23 to sentence them to death, but anybody who wants could kill them. Alma said, the Gemara says, we see from here, Kasova, that he holds, Yeshlohem Tarbus, the Yeshlohem Bailim, that it's possible to tame these animals, and they have owners. Since the Shlokish said that the Belozer holds, that you can't just walk over to a lion and kill them. The reason must be because he holds that they can be tamed and they can be owned by somebody. And therefore, if they didn't kill anybody, they don't deserve to die, you're not allowed to kill them. Because if you kill them, then you would be killing and damaging property that belongs to somebody. But Rabbi Yochanan says, that Rabbi Eliezer, when he said that anybody is able to kill these animals, even if they did not kill anybody. When you see a lion, a wolf, etc., you're able to kill them just like that. Alma, so we see Kasava, he holds, Elon Tarbus Feilon Bailin, that they cannot be tamed and they don't have owners. And therefore he says, when you see a lion, you don't have to find out whether the lion has an owner or not in order to kill him. As soon as you see him, you're allowed to kill him. Because even if he does have an owner, even if he is tamed, they are not considered tamed and they are not considered owned by anybody, and therefore you could kill him just like that. But the Gemara asked, now didn't we learn the Mishnah? Anybody who's first to kill them. Izoicha marries, that means he gains something. According to Rabbi Yochanan, who says that you're able to kill them even if they didn't kill anybody, then Lamai Zocha, what is Izoicha? What does he gain? Zocha Loiran, he gains the oil. You kill the animal. There's nothing you can do with the animal itself, but you could at least take off the skin and keep it. Ela Lirishlokish, but according to Rishlokish, who says that Rabbi Lozer only meant that if they kill somebody, that's when anybody is allowed to kill them. L'mai zocho, to what is he zoche? What does he gain by killing them? What does he have from it? Kiv nishemi, so since we're talking in the case that these animals killed, shavinu rabbonon kemande gomer dinayu, so it's as if the chachomim established that they were already sentenced. What is the pshat according to Rish Lakish? That if any of these animals killed, so normally if it would be an ox, you would have to have the bezin to judge the ox and then sentence him to death, then he would be killed. If it's a lion or a wolf, etc., then you don't have to have bezin to sentence it to death, but anybody could kill it. In other words, as soon as it kills, it's already sentenced to death for anybody to kill him. Now, if it's sentenced to death, so it has a din of a Sheiran Yiskel. The Yisuri Anoanim, it's Oser Bahanoah, because the din is that when an ox is sentenced to death, it is Oser Bahanoah. And when it's stoned, you can't do anything with it. You can't have any use of any part of it, even of the skin. So it would come out that if a lion or a wolf killed, and we established that the judgment was done already automatically, and you don't have to wait for a bezin, but they are as if they were sentenced, so they are also Oser Bahanoah. So anybody who kills them is not allowed to use any part of it. So what did he mean when he said, Kol HaKoidim Zocher, anybody who comes first to kill him is Zoicha first. What's he Zoicha in? And the Gemara answers, my Zoicha, you know what it means, Zoicha? Zoicha l'shamayim, he's Zoicha to Shemayim, which means he did a good deed. It doesn't mean he is Zoicha, he gets something from it. It just means that he did a good deed. And the Gemara says, Tanya kivasad Rish Lakish, we learn in the Braise. Like Rish Lakish, it says in the Braise, Echot shoy shahemis, whether it's an ox that killed, the Echot behema v'chaya shahemisu, or whether it's a behema or a chaya that killed. The Chav Gimel, you must have a bezin of 23 to judge them. Rebbe Lezer says, Shoy shahemis, if an ox killed, that's a mishloisha, you have to have 23. But shar behema v'chaya shahemisu, like any other behema and chaya that killed, anybody who comes first to kill them is Zoicha to Shemayim. So here we see clearly that the only time you're allowed to kill them, according to Rebbe Lezer, is if they killed. And what are you Zoicha in? You are Zoicha to Shemayim. You talk, I can't have any use from any part of it, but you did a good deed to Shemayim, you did a mitzvah. Concerning what we learned before, that we learn out from the pasuk where it says, V'gam ba'ol of Yumos, that we compare the Misa of the Sheir to the Misa of the Bailim. That just like if a person gets killed, he needs a bezin of Chav Gimel, so too, when the Sheir HaNiskel gets killed, he needs a bezin of Chav Gimel. And the Gemara asked the question, how do you know that the word, Gam Ba'ol of Yumos, come to teach us that? Maybe what it means really is that the owner has to get killed himself. Which means to say, that if we use the Pasuk to teach us that, Kemises HaBailim Kach Mises HaSheir, then the Pasuk does not mean that the owner gets killed. And that's the Gemara's question. How do you know that? Maybe the Pasuk refers to the Pashat of Pshat that the owner gets killed. So Toysa Afakasha, that Sof Kol Sof, even after we dash in the Pasuk, for Kemises HaBailim Kach Mises HaSheir, the word Gam Ba'ol of Yumos still remains to mean that he gets Mise. Because the din is that the Bailim gets Mise B'dei Shemayim, as we learn it out from this Pasuk, the Gam Ba'ol of Yumos. As the Gemara says in Ksubas, that we find that a person who gets Mise B'dei Shemayim is able to redeem his life through giving money. And the Gemara calls this Pasuk, says Gam Ba'ol of Yumos, and then it says Im Koyfa Yusha Solov, so we see that even though he's supposed to die b'day shemayim, nevertheless, he's able to redeem his life through money. So it seems as if the word yumos actually does mean that he should die. And this gemara is mashme, that if we darshan the pasuk for kemisa b'ayot kachmisa v'asher, then the word yumos is not simple pshat, it doesn't mean he should die. But l'poyel, it does mean he should die. And Taita's answer, that the gemara taki knows that when it says a gambol of yumos, means that he dies b'day shemayim, he gets misa b'day shemayim. And we still were able to learn out from the word where it says yumos. If it would just mean that he gets misa b'dei shemayim, it would say yomus, he would die. Yumos means he should get killed. Now what does the pasuk mean, he should get killed, when really he doesn't get killed b'dei adam? It comes to teach us, just like when a person gets killed by bezin, he needs 23, so too when you kill the sheir, he needs 23. And that's the Gemara's question. How do you know that this word yumos, the extra expression yumos instead of yomos, comes to teach us kemisa zabayim kachmisa zashoir? Maybe what the pasuk means when it says yumos, actually hitaka gets killed by bezin. And that's what the Gemara answers, that we can't say that because of the klal that we have, that al ritzichosoi ata hoirgoi, for his own murder you could kill him, but I ata hoirgoi ritzichashoiroi, you do not kill him for the murder of his sheir. But the question that one can ask here is that l'chora sof kol sof we have to understand the meaning of this din kemisa zavaylem kachmisa zashoir. That just like when you kill the person, you have to have 23. So too, when you kill a shoir, the shoir aniskul, you have to have a bezin of 23. L'chora, how can you compare the two? After all, killing a person is in the category of din in the nefashet, and killing an ox is in the category of din in mamonis. Because after all an ox is property of a person. So when you kill the ox, you're just ruining the property, you're damaging the person that has a din of din mamonis. So how can you compare din of mamonis to din of nefashis? Now if we would assume this is a gzeira sakosu, that the Torah makes a din and has no explanation, okay, so we'll say even though this is din of mamonis and this is din of nefashis, nevertheless, we say that just like by Misa HaBailim you need 23, Misa Shoir also needs 23, without But usually we don't like to do that. Only when we have no choice, that's when we say that a certain din would be a Gzeiras HaKosef. But for instance, in this case, we don't find not in Rashi and not in Tosfos that this should be a Gzeiras HaKosef. So we should try to find an explanation to this din of Kemisat Abayu and Kachmisat Asher and not to leave it just as being a Gzeiras HaKosef. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe Shlita in his Sefer Likut HaSichek explains it as follows. He explains it based on the Chkira that we have in the Achronim. Concerning the general din of Niske Momen, we know that if somebody's property damages something, then the owner of that property, for instance, the owner of the ox, he is obligated to pay to the one that got the damage. And there are two explanations given in the Achronim for that din. Why is it that the owner is obligated to pay? Because on one hand, it would seem that he should be potter, because he didn't do any damage. And the fact that his ox did damage, it's only a goyim. So why is he obligated to pay? So one explanation is because he did not watch the ox. Since he didn't watch the ox, he is responsible. Since it's his obligation to watch the ox, and he didn't, so therefore he is responsible to pay for the damage that was done by the ox. And that would apply to damage done that you have to pay money. That would also apply to the case when his ox killed somebody. He is also responsible because he didn't watch the ox, so therefore he is responsible for it. Another explanation is because mamaynai hizik, or mamaynai hamis, since that object belongs to him, the ox belongs to him, so that is like an extension of him. Since it is his property that caused the damage, he is responsible to pay for that damage, as if he did it himself. Because anything that belongs to him is an extension of him, because this is his. Or using the example, how come people feel that if one's child causes damage, I'm not talking about halacha now, but even in the feeling of people, that if a child causes damage, the father would feel responsible to pay because it's his child. The same here concerning halacha, that since the shayr is his shayr, it's his mamain, so therefore he is responsible for anything the shayr did. Because when the shayr does it, it's his money, it's as if he did it, because the shayr is his and it's an extension of him. One of the differences between these two svaras would be at which point does the Baal, the owner of the ox, do his Aveira? According to the first way, that the reason he is responsible is because he did not watch the ox, so his Aveira is done before, when he did not watch the ox. But when the ox actually damaged or killed, we cannot say that the owner has part in that Aveira. All the owner did was, he was a cause that later the ox should go out and damage or kill. It would be similar to a Siba or Mesuvah. The owner would be the Siba, he is the cause, and the ox is the Mesuvah, the damage of the ox, or the murder of the ox, is the Mesuvah, that is, the reaction from the cause. But the owner did not take part in the actual damage or in the actual killing. While according to the second way, when we say that the reason he is responsible is because the actions of the ox are really an extension of his actions, because Mamoinei Hizik, or Mamoinei Hamis, so then it comes out that when did the Baal, the owner, do his Aveira? When the ox damaged or killed, we say that at that moment, it is an extension of the owner that's doing it. It's as if the owner himself did it. So according to the second way that we're saying now, we can explain the reason for Kemisis Habaylim Kachmisis Asher. The question we asked was, how can we compare the two? When we kill the ox, really all we're doing is Dini Momon, if it's not Dini Nefashis. The answer is, this is Dini Nefashis. Because the ox, what he did was, he was doing it in the place of the owner, which means when he killed, we consider it as if a person killed, and therefore the whole din that applies to this Shaira Niskel is not din imominus, but it is din nefesh. Especially, according to the Svara that we say, that the owner really is chayim misa b'dei shamayim, certainly it seems to be showing that he has part in the murder itself. If we would learn according to the first way, then he has no part in the murder, all he is a Siba, then it is hard to say that killing the ox would be din in the fashas. Because when the ox killed, it has nothing to do with a human being. There is no din in the fashas involved. The owner's part in the Aveira is only that he didn't watch it. He is a Siba. So therefore, it's even hard to understand why he should get Misa B'dei Shemayim. But if we're going to say that when the ox killed, the owner actually as if participated in the killing because Mamayne Hizik, so then we understand why he gets Misa B'dei Shemayim, and we also understand why this whole thing is considered Din in the Fashas. And therefore, the Din would be that when you kill the ox, you also need the Bezin of Chav Gimel, just like when you kill the person. The truth is that even according to the first way, we could explain it. Because whatever explanation we're going to give according to the first way, why the owner gets Misa B'dei Shemayim, but if we do assume that he gets Misa B'dei Shemayim, that itself shows that there is some kind of Din Nefashot here. And therefore we understand why K'misa Sabayil and K'ach Misa Shoyer. But according to the second way, it is more understood because here we actually have an explanation how the owner participated in the killing, and therefore this is all called Din Nefashot. And the Rebbe continues to explain that according to both ways, we could understand the pshat in the Gemara when the Gemara darshens Aretzichosoi Atahoirgoi V'Atahoirgoi Aretzichashoiroi. Now according to the first way, that the reason the owner is punished is because he did not watch the shayr. So what does the Gemara mean Aretzichosoi Atahoirgoi V'Atahoirgoi Aretzichashoiroi? Push it. Only if he himself killed, that's when he could get killed. But if his shayr killed, then you cannot kill the owner because the owner did not participate in the killing. Your question would be only why does he get Misa B'dei Shemayim, and that would need an explanation in itself. But as far as why he doesn't get killed B'dei Odom, it's very understood because he did not participate in the murder. According to the second way, we could explain just the opposite. And after all, the owner is not responsible at all. According to the second way, from one angle, it is less connection to the owner than according to the first way. Because according to the second way, we do not say that the owner is responsible for the fact that he killed because he didn't watch him. According to the second way, the owner is not responsible at all. The owner didn't do anything wrong. Even though the din is that if he did watch, he is potter, but that's like a t'nai. But the reason for the chiyuv is not because he didn't watch. It is because of mamayna hizik. So that is, on one hand, it puts him more closer to the time when the ox kills, but on the other hand, actually, he didn't do anything wrong. But it's only that his ox killed, and since his ox belongs to him, it's an extension of him. And that's what the Gemara means. We learn often here that if he himself does something, he gets killed. But if he doesn't do anything, it's only his ox that did it. So even though his ox is an extension of him, but after all, it's only his ox, and therefore, he is punished.